You're listening to a Stranger podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, you're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's weekly conversation with people in art. I'm Jen Graves, and usually I'm the host, but today I'm being interviewed by my editor, Christopher Frizzell.
Hello, Jen Graves. How are you?
Hi.
Okay, so today we are talking about a story that, of yours that appears in the paper. It's on page 42 of the current issue. It's called Gray Area, and it's about two prominent Seattle artists who work under the name Lead Pencil Studio, who have been the subject of some recent controversy in the local art world. The controversy raises a lot of really interesting questions. Their work has been called into question for its resemblances to other works of art by other artists. And whether or not you believe it resembles other works by other artists depends a lot on who you are. And it seems like, from my read of your story, there are kind of two different camps. One camp represented by Michael Darling at Seattle Art Museum and Regina Hackett at the Post-Intelligencer, who think there is something iffy going on. And the other camp represented by Liz Brown at the Henry Art Gallery and Beth Sellers at CU OmniSpace, who are inclined to agree with the artists that these are coincidental. Where do you fall on that side, on that equation?
Well, I would say that it's more complicated than just a two-sided thing. I think everybody's opinion is pretty nuanced. The person I found myself, after doing a whole bunch of research, the person I found myself most sympathetic with is Liz Brown. And her take is that it is sort of a classic case of, you know, political style, what did you know and when did you know it, but not in the way you might think. It's not that she believes the artists have done anything in terms of theft. She believes them when they say they haven't seen these other works and that the resemblances are coincidental. She also says that what they did wrong is not to investigate deeply enough the artists who are working in the same territory that they are.
Territory meaning city?
Territory meaning city, but also other architects, you know, other artist architects working.
Right.
And the one of the pieces that's in question is a piece that they made that's up right now in North Carolina called Without Room, and that piece has been compared to a piece by the Seattle artist architect Roy McMakin, and his piece is called Laquita Faye Melvin. So he's a Seattle artist architect that it would be natural for them to be up on, in other words, is her take on it. And Liz talks about that it's not that sort of her faith in the artist is shaken, it's just that she, in the future, if she were to work with them as a curator, she would say, have you guys seen this? Did you check out this? Would you mind looking at this? Or whatever.
So it's essentially their responsibility to know what else has been done.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The case of Roy is interesting. Roy McMakin is a very talented Seattle artist and architect, mm-hmm. like Lead Pencil Studio. They are also artists and architects, and they are younger than McMakin, mm-hmm. and they live in the same city. And they recently won a Genius Award in visual art given to them by The Stranger. Do you think that they stole ideas from McMakin?
I don't have any reason to believe that they did. And I also take some cues on that from the other people who know them and who I interviewed. They say they didn't see Roy McMakin's show in 2004 at the Henry that included this particular piece.
Can you explain what that piece looked like and mm-hmm. how it looked like a lead pencil piece mm-hmm. and why you think they're different?
So the Laquita Faye Melvin is a piece, and again, I didn't see this piece in person, so I've tried to gather up all the details I can, from talking to people and from images. But the piece is it's a recreation of all the furniture that Roy remembers from his grandmother's house, his grandmother being Laquita Faye Melvin. And, it's a recreation of that, taking into account sort of child scale, and also all of the furniture is gray. So it's sort of ghostly, and the way that it was displayed at the Henry was all kind of crowded together inside an enclosure. So you couldn't go in there and walk around inside the furniture. It was all pushed together as though it were being put into storage, kind of. The way it's sort of locked in a memory.
And what did the lead pencil piece look like?
The lead pencil piece, I haven't seen this one in person either. But the lead pencil piece, which is up now in North Carolina, and the only person in Seattle that I know of who's seen this piece is actually their dealer, so it's hard to find people. But it is called Without Room, and it is a person who lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, volunteered to have her room reconstructed in secondhand furniture inside a gallery. So it's a room of gray furniture with some natural colored objects on a platform in the gallery on a diagonal with no walls. So the room is just organized by the stuff. And the way they chose to volunteer was to put an ad in the newspaper asking for somebody who lived in a studio or a one-bedroom.
So the similarity is gray painted furniture.
Yes.
And how are they different?
It seems to me that they're pretty different. The Roy mixes furniture by hand, and it's gorgeous. It's sort of exquisite. And it also, in this particular piece, looks like it's very sort of, it does take that kind of childlike, they're like animals, you know, like a lamp with an animal in the base or something like that that you would remember from your grandmother's house. And the furniture being jumbled together is a decision that reflects Roy's desire that the piece doesn't actually have a way of taking up space that's a particular way. When the piece is sold, the piece is for sale, and if the piece is sold, he wants all these pieces of furniture that were jumbled together at the Henry Art Gallery to be scattered around in someone's house among the natural colored objects. That's something that nobody that I talked to knew until I talked to them. So that piece's relationship to the space it's in is really, really changeable and very different from a piece that is about bringing, sort of reconstituting an anonymous home precisely from documentation in a space and leaving out all the actual architecture, but conjuring the architecture with the stuff. So it's a very different way of using architecture and furniture. The question, I think, is whether it's a very, very different way of using gray. And I think they're trying to use lead pencil. It seems to me they're trying to use it to get across some sort of anonymity. This is actually something that Liz Brown talked about, that it seemed like they were trying to use it to get across anonymity, whereas Roy is getting across this very ghostly memory feeling. The other thing is that when I looked at that the first time, I hadn't seen Roy's piece, and I thought of the artist Thomas Demand, who remakes spaces in paper. He goes and takes, you know, precise measurements of places, and he remakes interiors of paper and then photographs them. And they just feel so off. At first you don't notice there's anything wrong, and then you start to notice that everything is sort of wrong. There are no markers, there's nothing there. And so that's what I first thought of. And when you look at, I was also trying to remember who else that might look like. And when I was talking to Liz again, I said, you know, there's something that I'm thinking of. And she said, it's the prisons of James Casaberry. James Casaberry's photographs of prisons, he makes models and then photographs them. And it, for her, she was saying that is a resemblance. And she also said that might actually be an unconscious influence on both McMakin and Lead Pencil Studio.
That's fascinating. So what's the story with Mariella Neudecker, the other artist who they're being accused of copying?
Yeah, well, this is the place where the rubber hits the road, right? Because having one accusation is sort of pedestrian occurrence, but two at the same time is sort of, it's very uncomfortable. It produces a ton of anxiety, I think. For me too, I just felt really uncomfortable looking at those. The Marielle Neudecker piece, again, I have not seen this in person, it's about 6 feet. It's it's hard to describe this thing. It's a sculpture of a wall and a floor that sort of stands on its own pedestal. And there are two Gothic windows on it that have string. It's fluorescent fishing line, actually, coming in sort of at an angle as though it were light from the windows. The piece is, I interviewed the artist, and the piece is based on a postcard, a black and white postcard of light streaming in through Grand Central Station windows. And her work is often dealing with the romantic. This isn't an artist that a lot of people in Seattle knew about before this. Actually, somebody at the Seattle Art Museum, while researching something else, came across an image of this piece after the lead pencil show had come down. So nobody, while it was up, noticed that it had this resemblance to something else. The lead pencil piece is a 13 foot high by 30 foot long installation in the Lorimore Project front room is where it was shown last spring. This is the first place it was ever shown, and it was made for that space so that the windows are black secondhand windows that are put up on the wall, and nylon thread, a woven nylon thread comes in light blue color as though it were the light. It's that same effect as the Neudecker used, and the Neudecker piece predates their work by, I think, 7 years, so it's an earlier piece for sure. And in the lead pencil piece, they are responding to a room they actually designed.
Because they designed Lorimore Project.
Because they designed Lorimore Project. So it's a different sort of case, but the resemblances are uncanny.
So that piece by lead pencil was purchased by Bill and Ruth True,
mm-hmm.
who own Western Bridge,
mm-hmm.
which incidentally was designed by Roy McMakin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very tight little web. Does the fact that The Stranger gave an award to Lead Pencil Studio make this story more complicated for you?
Yeah, definitely. I find myself a little bit in a similar position to Ruth True.
What does Ruth have to say?
Well, here's how this happened. I saw this post by Regina Hackett of the PI, and I called Roy. And I wanted to know which of his works this looked like, and if he could tell me a little bit more about the works. And he told me about Laquita Faye Melvin, and he also told me about a work he made at the True's house, which uses gray paint sort of draped, well, sort of as though it were brushed over an entire area of a room to demarcate the room. The area, which is the sleeping area in their son's room. There was a question of whether that was similar to the Lead Pencil Studio piece that's at North Carolina, because there's a rectangle of gray on the ceiling above the room that demarcates the room. So I asked the Trues whether I could come over to their house and look at this piece, which I hadn't seen, and also whether I could talk to them a little bit about this. And Bill is in the story, and he had more aesthetic questions, and he was in a lot more conflict inside himself. But Ruth really didn't kind of know what to think. She, a few months ago, when the Seattle Art Museum curator found the image of the Neudecker, and it became clear that they had, the Trues had bought something that resembled something else, she had sort of gone through it with that piece. But this piece hit much closer to home because Roy is a long collaborator of theirs in terms of, their house and their gallery, but they also collect him and all this stuff. And so I asked her what she thought, and she said, well, I'm trying to figure out whether I really question their motives, or whether I'm just questioning their motives because everyone else questions their motives. And I felt really similarly. I tried very hard to think about what it would be like if these were artists that I had not already sort of publicly declared admiration for. I tried to go back through and just kind of question myself at every turn. And I hope I did a good job of that, but it was very complicated. And at the same time, you know, it sort of had a conversation with this about Michael Darling. You know, he said, well, you know, I don't just want to be seen as the guy who's coming out against these artists. You know, I haven't seen all of their work. I haven't seen, you know, all that stuff. You know, I just have these questions, and fair enough. And I actually really applaud him for giving an opinion. You know, that's a curator's job is to sort of ask questions, give opinions. And I said, you know, I can really relate to that, because when we gave, when The Stranger gave Sutton Barrett's Color a Genius Award, it was before I got here, and they already had an audience that they had gained through works that I hadn't seen. So when I came on staff, I just felt like, wow, I haven't seen everything of theirs. I feel incredibly uncomfortable saying very much about them. And so that was really difficult. And I don't know whether that gave them a disadvantage with me as a critic because I didn't know all their work, but I think it did, because I wasn't able to say, well, this piece I know was really strong, this piece I know is not, you know? And so it, in a lot of ways, it's that knowledge question. It comes down to what did you know and when did you know it for everybody besides the artists, for the critics and the curators. Like, how much of their works have you seen? And how much do you know about what they're really doing?
I know this is in your story in the paper this week, but why don't you just tell us what Lead Pencil Studios' response to the accusations has been?
They were, I called them in Rome. They were kind of sort of, not, they were in disbelief, really. They talked about that they said it wouldn't benefit anybody to redo work that's already been done, and in addition, they'd have to be really stupid to have picked Roy in particular to, you know, to copy, since he's like right in their backyard. I asked them whether they thought that other people having come up with similar ideas made them think that their ideas were weaker. And they said no, because of the conceptual differences and the differences in the way that they arrived at them. And this is also something that came up with when Ruth talked about it. But, you know, I did kind of, it felt very awkward, but I did make them go through, okay, well, where did you come up with the idea for Gray? And where did you come up with the idea for this? And they talked about that they originally thought they were going to paint the whole room seafoam green, and they painted like a third of all the objects seafoam green, and then decided it just looked horrible. And so I called the curator at the museum. I mean, it felt really strange to question them this deeply, but I felt like it was important to do it. So I called the curator at that North Carolina museum, and she said they still have a whole bunch of seafoam green paint in their shop in the basement, because that's the color they originally bought. So it seems like if they were going to sort of like, you know, like steal somebody's idea of making gray furniture, it would be a really sort of backwards, backflip sort of way to like go paint everything seafoam green first and then make a switch.
Now, hilariously, this has happened to Lead Pencil before, right? And they've been on the other side of the table.
Yes, yeah. There was an installation by Predoc Frayn Architects at the Venice Biennale in 2004 that used white and green filaments to fill a space in a very, very similar way to the way Annie and Daniel of Lead Pencil Studio used white and green filaments to fill Suyama space in Seattle. So they decided at that time, they were pretty upset about the idea that someone might have stolen something. I think anybody would be, you know. These feelings are really all understandable when you get right down to it. And Beth Sellers was the curator of that show, and she was also very upset about that. But in the end, they decided not to say anything because they thought there was a chance it was just a coincidence. And so they sort of still don't know quite how to feel about that. But
that's funny.
Yeah.
Does this only happen to Lead Pencil? Has this happened to other artists?
I think it does happen to other artists. I mean, Michael Darling said something really interesting. He said that for him, when artists are borrowing from their peers, it feels really uncomfortable. But when artists are borrowing from a different generation, then it feels fine. You know, it feels interesting even. So it reminded me of a case I saw when I was at the Museum of Modern Art this winter, fall, during the Martin Puryear show. There was a piece up there, and I looked it up before we talked, but called Untitled, from 1989, made of red cedar, and it's this long sort of loop of wood that hangs on the wall and looks sort of like a hollowed out canoe, vaguely. And that piece reminded me a lot of Chris Brew, a Seattle artist, his 2006 piece, Cleave, which is made of mahogany. And you know, Chris has talked about Martin Puryear being a major influence, but when I went through that show, I thought, wow, he really was a major influence. And it almost felt too close to me. But, you know, I mean, there are examples of artworks looking the same all the time. There's a famous interview where Frank Stella, the painter, says, you know, my works look more than anything like Victor Vassarelli's, and they have nothing to do with each other. We're coming from completely different vantage points. And that's naturally going to be a problem when you're talking about, like, you know, abstract painting, which is really stripped down. But it can also apparently be a problem when you're talking about hollowed out canoes and light streaming through windows and filaments filling a room and gray furniture.
It's really a fascinating story. It's called Gray Area. It's on page 42 of the current issue of The Stranger. You've been listening to The Invisible Podcast.